Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I'm your host, Stryker, and with me, as always, is Phil.
How you doing?
Me or them?
Our viewers, or our listeners. And how you doing, Stryker?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking.
It's good to know, man.
And I have Mr. Johnny.
Amen.
To the viewers. A little spoiler alert. That was Johnny's Tom Hardy impersonation he's working on.
I don't know what you're talking about because I haven't seen the movie yet.
Well, have you seen Tom Hardy in any movie?
Any Tom Hardy?
Yeah, he's got the most bizarre, like, inconsistent voice I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's like...
You can't remember where his origins are because whenever you hear him talk, it's something completely different, but it almost always has...
Yeah, a lot of grunts. A lot of Clint Eastwood type grunts.
Yeah, and Bronson. Have you seen him in Bronson? Where he's like, "Rrr, cunt!"
No, that was a great example.
You'll know what I'm talking about when you see that scene.
So, Johnny, how have you been?
I've been rock solid. Watching movies, lamenting, and... tearing my clothes after finding out that we lost last week's podcast episode.
Yeah, let me just touch on that. I am horribly sorry for such a happening. To give you a little background, it literally crashed, Audacity did, as I was saving. Literally, the save bar was filling up and it crashed, so I apologize about that. It's our long lost episode.
We were weeping. For 3 days after it.
Actually, during the podcast, we just weeped the whole time. Yeah. So maybe you didn't miss much.
Actually, I didn't start weeping until, like, Thursday.
Yeah, you didn't really know until Thursday.
I
should have told you.
But it's all right.
Okay, I just want to say, you and I have the same ass on our laptop screen.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
Oh, this, like, advertisement? Oh,
okay.
Weird.
Yeah.
So, Phil, how you been?
I've been alright, dude. I got my portfolio turned in. Only time will tell. It's off my hands now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done everything I'm supposed to do. Now I can kind of relax. Still got assignments and stuff to do, but been doing some drawing and some practicing, you know.
When do you find out about that?
I think sometime around the 20th.
Oh, wow. The
20th. It's really soon.
Cool, man. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So, we have got some... We've got some news this week to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I figure we might as well start. Now, you guys don't know this, but last week we brought up the idea that there might be a new Castlevania-type game coming out. We found out this week what exactly that entailed. Johnny, hit me with the news.
Okay, so new Castlevania game made by IGA. I don't remember his full name. He made Symphony of the Night, amongst other things, but that was his biggest work. And he is coming back with a successor specifically to Symphony of the Night, nothing else Castlevania or else that he's done, called Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, where you play as a girl. So it's Girlvania.
But aren't there more than one selectable character?
There's three. There are two other characters, although she's the mascot of the game. I have to say, it's just like Mighty No. 9 so far. I believe it's the same company backing them as a Kickstarter project. But what did you ever find out what their similarities were to the Mighty No. 9 team?
As far as I know, that's... Not necessarily. I think it's just like a publisher. I don't think that development-wise they have really anything to do with it.
They have great PR, but Mighty No. 9 turned out to be such a mess that I'm not confident in it. But at the same time, like before I talk about that, like I backed the game. So you missed it last week, but last week I was pretty much just talking shit about Kickstarter from... we talked about the new Rare game...
Ukulele.
Ukulele. And not that I have anything negative to say, but I don't trust even devs that I like with Kickstarter, because I don't think that they really get enough of what they need to make the game work.
You don't trust Kickstarter game campaigns, basically, for developing.
And it's not that I don't trust all of them. It's that I think that there's a big risk that for disappointment, and you have to wait a long time after putting your money in. So, there's a lot of drama that surrounds Kickstarter stuff, and that part I don't like. But with this game, it's not really any different, but I love Castlevania, and I think that even if you screw it up, it'll still be pretty fun. Whereas Mega Man is such a simple game, like, they screwed it up, and I don't really want to play it because it's just a 2D platformer shooter. It's not a Metroidvania. Just Metroidvanias in general, even if they're just okay, I find that gameplay concept interesting. So even if it sucks, it's still a Vania type and styled game.
In comparison to Bloodstained, how quickly did Mighty No. 9 raise the Kickstarter limit that it wanted to raise?
Just as fast. In fact, probably faster. I think that they ended at like... I don't know where they ended Mighty No. 9, but I know it was a record at the time. It was a couple million. And it was at the start of the Kickstarter era, really.
Let me ask you this. I kind of feel like, and this may not be the fact because I've never seen it come to fruition from beginning to end, but I almost feel like with like a Kickstarter campaign and like an early access type of scenario that you could almost experience maybe something where you, because you're constantly checking and hearing updates and all this stuff about the game, it almost feels like when it comes out that it would, maybe you'd get kind of like by then you're sort of sick of it in a way. And like you obviously haven't played it or anything, but you've like had
2017.
You've had your ear to the development and what's going on for this entire time, to the point where you know the ins and outs from a basic level.
Before you even see it.
Yeah, before you even see it. And I just wonder if that if it dulls the experience to a certain extent.
It totally kills it. And I can only imagine, because you also get like alpha and beta builds with a lot of these.
Yeah.
This hasn't mentioned anything like that, and I'm glad. But a lot of games, it's like, well, how do we make incentives to get people like, oh, well, maybe they'll play an alpha, you know, a year and a half from now. And that's what a lot of things do. That's what Star Citizen has done. I mean, God, we've talked about Star Citizen, or I've talked about Star Citizen for like the last 2.5 years now.
I feel like Star Citizen's been around since I was a kid.
Yeah. and it's like they've got some crappy, okay, like little test demo-y things, but people have heard development updates about that game for a long time, and you know, they've been holding on to millions upon millions of dollars. And they're still generating money off of it. But, yeah, anyways, this game, on its own, it's got some cool things about it. David Hayter is going to play the voice of one of the three main characters in the game after they hit a certain point. Now it's been kickstarted. Their goal is at 500,000. They are now just hit 2 million today, and they keep revealing new stretch goals. Like, we just unlocked a boss rush mode. Once you beat the game, you can go back to each boss one by one. Little stuff like that. I like it when, I had a friend who pointed this out to me. Ukulele is doing one good thing with Kickstarter, and that's to show that they're not entirely relying on going past the original goal and into the stretch goal territory. Their stretch goals aren't that big, and I think that's a good sign for a Kickstarter game, is when your stretch goals aren't that big. This game, they're not big, but they're definitely pretty cool, I guess. But, like, they're not, if you hit 1 million, we'll make 10 extra levels. Like, none of that bullshit. And there are games that are doing that. It's like, well, we'll design more game if you give us more money.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I think that...
Just make the fucking game.
And then add to it once you...
If you think about the actual amount of money that goes into making a Kickstarter, a game on Kickstarter, it's a lot more that's required than people give credit. So it's like, for example, people thought that Elite Dangerous was a $2 million game, and they're like, oh, that's not going to be as good as Star Citizen because Star Citizen's got however many gajillion dollars donated from Kickstarter. But in games are expensive, and that turns out that $2 million that Elite Dangerous generated, or $1.5 million, which that's another space sim type game. That was just like to prove that people wanted the game, and to up the backer investment from actual investors investing like a lot more than that. They invested like $9 million into Elite Dangerous on the side.
That's good.
So I think that's one way Kickstarter can work, is to prove that there's a market for a game.
Yeah.
By selling copies before it's really even announced, which is, you know, a debatable business practice. But I think that I'd prefer them to have a publisher. I know the idea is that they're not chained to the man.
Uh-huh.
You know.
But at the same time, there's another sort of stake in it, you know.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they have their own...
They have the douchebag community to fucking deal with. It was constantly changing things around.
Yeah.
For Mighty Number 9, there was this lady, and I'm not going to get into the whole feminist thing, mm-hmm. but there was this one lady who said, please make it to where we can play as Call, the girl, in Mighty Number 9. She tweeted to the Mighty Number 9 staff, and somehow they got to talking, and she made it... A thing like, you know, you need to be able to play as girls in games. I think it would be cool to play as the girl in Mighty Number 9. Yeah, they should they already have her as a cool character design, just make her playable, whatever. But it started turning a whole, like, feminist thing, and then they started talking with the Mighty Number 9 devs, and now she's a robot designer, like, and a lead community manager and all this other weird stuff. So now she just, like, landed a position in that team. So it's like the loud, vocal, complaining community that's like, this should be this way. This should be my way. Now they're like, kind of like, you know, some of them are finding jobs and working for them because this person, it's so sporadic.
So this person was a robot designer for the game?
She became one after, and a community manager, after complaining on their Twitter.
Is she actually a qualified artist, or...
I think she's okay.
Okay.
So, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, but her work experience was minimal. So it just kind of went to show how it's a relatively unprofessional business practice.
She sounds kind of familiar. Who's she?
I don't know.
You know her?
I saw a
So what do you want from what would you want from this game? Like, what do you want it to be like Symphony of the Night? Just, I mean, is there any steps forward that you would like out of it?
I mean, I'd want it to be any of the good, like, I mean, I played some good Vania games in the last couple of years, like Guacamelee, and, you know, mm-hmm. I want it to be Symphony of the Night, but more, I want it to have it could just be like an indie game kind of feel, but that's made by IGA and has a little bit more, you know, budget and hype around it. And that's cool, but the one thing that concerns me, or a couple things, you know, is Kickstarter, and the fact that it's 2.5D, like Mighty Number 9, which I know that they're not saying that it's going to look like Mighty Number 9, but that game looks like shit, and there are other 2.5D games. They cite Strider and Guilty Gear Xrd as their references.
Oh, that's cool. There's going to be some Strider in it.
Well, in terms of inspiration, yeah.
Cool.
Which is great. But if you think about it, that was probably the inspiration for Mighty Number 9. It's like, was there not enough budget? Like, what do we need to do to make this game work? Is $2 million really enough money to make what he wants us to make? Like, or what he wants his team to make?
Yeah.
Well,
because, you know, $500,000 isn't. And who's the publisher? Like, Kickstarter to me is just confusing, and we've seen it fail. So, mm-hmm. like... I don't want to see something I love dearly slowly crash and burn after 2 years like Mighty Number 9 just did. I mean, it's just now coming out. That thing's taking forever. So I don't want this process to happen all over again with a game that I like.
Yeah.
Because I like the character designs a lot for this game. I think
it looks cool.
It looks like a more refreshing... Like, it's the same thing as the Castlevania game. Well, Symphony of the Night looks a lot darker and... you know, it's just less colorful.
Like, yeah, this one has a lot more color to it. And different color scheme.
I gotta say, I love the character design. I love the character design of the girl. I love her cool, like, stained glass looking tattoos that she's got on her.
I like the one dude, too. He looked kind of cool. The guy with, like, I don't remember what he was wearing, but he had, like, a suspenders or something.
Yeah. He's like an archaeologist or something.
Yeah, he looked cool. So, yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I hope that it's... I don't know. The Kickstarter campaigns, it's just, you kind of have to wait and see, and you have to wait for a really long time before you find out.
It's a weird frontier era that Kickstarter is, that you could either succeed or fail miserably. Because we have gotten games that people have really liked from Kickstarter, like Shovel Knight and Divinity. Not Beyond Divinity.
Original Sin.
Original Sin, yeah. And Original Sin, by the way, in the news, is getting an enhanced edition. I never played it, but it got rave reviews.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh yeah, and just released, there was the Obsidian RPG that was like Baldur's Gate. That, I think Kickstarter works well for that kind of thing. Like, we're Obsidian, we already have all, you know, we've got all our shit together, we've already made a bunch of RPGs as this team, we're not new, we're not going to hire community managers and stuff. Like,
just already established.
It's already established. We know how to make Baldur's Gate. We have like an engine. We just give us like a couple $1 million and we'll make a Baldur's Gate like game. And at that point, you just need art and story and a new D&D system.
So, is there anyone who worked on Symphony of the Night other than the original director that will be on this Bloodstained project?
I thought some of the art team.
It's a little bit, yeah.
Something like that.
There's just a few people. It's a relatively small team of like 14 or something right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another game that got announced this week, we actually mentioned it in the Lost episode, was a new Assassin's Creed. Now, let me just start this off by saying that kind of the general consensus that we came to last week when we talked about it was that we felt we had kind of a sour taste in our mouth before even seeing the game, just because I think we were all in agreement that the Assassin's Creed franchise is sort of stale, to say the least. And not only that, but the last game they released was horribly broken upon release.
Mm-hmm.
And took a good couple of months before it was in working condition. So that was our view going in before we ever heard any of this game. And I think that we can all agree that we would have rather they just take this year off for an Assassin's Creed game.
Yep. I feel like I did dodge a bullet by not buying Unity. But we'll see what happens, you know, with the next game. Have you seen the trailer?
So it's called Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in London. This is in the, you know, what, I don't remember what year. It was 1860 something or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so It's the most modern Assassin's Creed game as far as where the past story takes place.
And,
you know, London is a cool environment. I would hope that they have some sort of teases at the Jack the Ripper, because that would be cool.
That would be
cool. Whitechapel is in the game, they said.
Arthur Conan Doyle is probably going to be in it.
Oh, God, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
So, did you guys all, you saw the trailers, everybody saw the gameplay?
Yeah, I saw the trailers. I saw him take his top hat off and put the hood over it.
Yeah, and there was, like, carriage, you could go on, like, a carriage and ride around the city and go on, like, carriage chases and stuff like that. And he has also, like, a grappling hook.
Mm-hmm.
There's no swords, really. It's all, like, fist fighting, sort of like Gangs of New York.
Sweet.
I think he has, like, a little, like, knife thing that he can use, but it's pretty much all, like, hand-to-hand combat and environmental attacks and things like that. So, you know, it's a fresh type of some different gameplay elements. I just can't bring myself to get super excited for an Assassin's Creed game at this point, just because of the way the franchise is and what's happened. You know, it's annualized and not great. Black Flag was really sweet. I really like Black Flag a lot.
I have nothing but praise for Black Flag.
I really enjoyed that game, but then Unity just came out and like destroyed my thinking of the series and my opinion of it. So I don't know. You know, we'll see. It looked interesting, and if it comes out and actually runs well, that would be cool. But what do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, I can't get myself to care at all. Mm-hmm. Even I watched that trailer and I felt absolutely nothing, because I was excited for Unity. Like, I actually was like, oh, well, Black Flag was a success. and Unity should be good. It looks like the most promising one yet. Oh, everything sucked. Okay, great. Like, the story is so drawn, overplayed. It's so bad. It's gotten to the point where it's just an endless soap opera of nothing. Even if they have characters or historical events, they've stopped handling them well at some point, and now it's just cheesy Hollywood trash.
I feel like they've gotten to the point in the series where they have to shoehorn in historical events and stuff to the point where it affects their ability to tell a good story, because they have to tie it into the modern timeline. They have to do this and that, and it's like, because there's these tropes that the series has become known for, and I just, you know, it, like you said, I liked the Black Flag story, the past story, the modern one. I could care less about. And then Unity was just the story that, at least as far as I experienced it, was just boring.
It was just a dry cobweb fart.
Just a fart. I mean, it was just boring. That's all there is to it. It was not exciting.
A cobweb fart. I've never heard that before.
Wow. I don't know what I was going for with that, but...
But I think I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah, so the voice acting and everything in France was... It was London. It was Shakespearean, but it was, like, really shitty Shakespearean. And it was just... It felt like I was watching a cheap History Channel drama show or something. Like, but... And the writing isn't very intelligent anymore. Like, at first, it seemed like it was going to get that way, and it was building up, and Assassin's Creed 2 for 2009, really, or whatever, 2008, really blew me away. Mm-hmm. But everything after that has just been, like, you can't... It was the biggest mistake, pumping that game out year after year, and financially, they may not say so, but they definitely had a business model in mind early on and forced these games out because forced.
I got to tell you, I don't know. You know, it would take a lot of time to research this, and I'm sure that they have experts that tell them it's a good idea. But I just don't see how, even financially, pumping a game out year after year doesn't affect in the long term.
Well, sooner or later, it's going to have a side effect. I mean, it's not, how long is that going to last if the games keep being bad?
But that's just the thing. If Guitar Hero could pump out a game a year, and they slowly got worse and worse, and sold worse and worse, at some point the cash cows stopped. But how much money did they make? So everybody now is thinking, ugh, Guitar Hero, gross. Mm. Or Tony Hawk, after Tony Hawk Ride was a poop. That one was an actual financial disaster. But, like, you know, all of these failed...
Let me just I would like to play a new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5. If it was just a standard...
There hasn't been a skating game in a long time, so that's fair. Yeah. But when they were pumping shit out for a franchise and milking it for every penny it had to the point where no one liked it anymore... Mm-hmm. And they had to stop making it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't matter if no one likes it anymore. They made a shit ton of money off a shit ton of games. If they can bring out an Assassin's Creed game every year and try to keep it relevant for as long as possible, everyone knows about it. So when there's a new game, the average guy, the layman, is going to go out and pick up an Assassin's Creed game because that's the hot new game. Even if they don't know anything about it, they're going to be like, oh yeah, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. Like, those are the yearly titles. They almost subscribe to them. Or maybe they'll get it as a one-off.
Yeah.
But in the end, you see these games, even if they sell worse and worse each game, they sell millions upon millions of units because everybody knows about it. While they know about it, might as well make another one each year. Even if it sucks dog dick.
Even if their faces just disappear and there's nothing but their fucking eyes. There's nothing
but eyes and it's horrifying. Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, I just, you know... If the game comes out and it's cool and it's a good game and it, like I said, it performs well, which we shouldn't have to say. I mean, the game, especially when they're dumping this much money into it and it's such a big title from a huge developer and publisher, should at least run well. But
I'm sure that they're gonna like try to focus on quality control for this one.
They actually already right after they released like the gameplay footage and the trailers and stuff like that, there was a developer insight behind the scenes type of video where they just interviewed different people about the negative, literally only about the negative reaction of Unity, and they were like, yeah, it really sucked. We tried to do a lot and we failed and blah blah blah. And you know, it was they were self-aware. I still think that they didn't really touch on the performance issues as much as I would have liked, because that was the main issue with the game. I mean, they kind of just talked about, you know, like, it was the biggest city we ever built and the story and blah, blah, blah. But it's like the game came out and ran like shit. Like, I want to hear you talk about that and reassure me that that's not going to happen. But I don't know. We'll see.
The
kind of like Vince McMahon not saying that the WWE will get better, right?
I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh. Well, I mean, sorry, you're a wrestling guy. And
what are you talking
wait,
about?
Wait, Striker, do you like wrestling?
No. Wrestling?
Loves wrestling.
Yeah, I do.
To my understanding, there was supposed to be an interview after an episode of Raw where Vince McMahon, people were expecting Vince McMahon to say something along the lines of, yes, it's
oh,
not
you
that
mean like on when he did the interview with Stone Cold on the for his podcast and after Raw?
And it was just basically just trying to get people to buy the WWE Network, but it was nothing just on the performance of Raw.
No, he was making a lot of excuses.
Yeah, I just found myself really into that, sort of.
Yeah, and that was actually a really interesting interview, but he did do that. It was very just quality control and not really addressing the issues honestly. It was just kind of giving PC answers and stuff like that. So
yeah, and I feel like I've talked about this before, but the Assassin's Creed dev team is really talented, and the Assassin's Creed franchise idea is something that I'd be a fan of if they just took time to sit back and contemplate, take a break, not a year break, not 2 year break. Fucking 3 year break. Okay, it was a 2 year break between 1 and 2, and it was refreshing, and it was a big jump forward, and it was the only jump forward. And Assassin's Creed 4 was only a jump forward because they just kind of got, you know, a good thing going.
They made something cool in Assassin's Creed 3, where you can actually pilot a ship, you can sail a ship, and then they expanded upon that and made that into the entire next game.
Yeah,
and it really paid off.
Yeah, so they, I mean, they have good ideas. They're a talented dev team. I like them, and they're being totally screwed. I like Ubisoft's development effort and all their IPs. I like them. Ubisoft does a terrible job at milking them horribly. Mm-hmm. It's like the opposite of the Capcom Konami effect.
I can't. You can't tell me that the developers themselves don't get just like burn out on it. I mean, how would you feel? You celebrate your release of a new game by going back to work after a 2 week vacation and talking about the next version of that game. Like that, after a while, that's got it. I know that they sort of leapfrog developers and different teams and stuff like that. But I mean, these people are either always they're working on Assassin's Creed or you know maybe switching over and helping with like Far Cry or but. They're working on an Assassin's Creed game to a certain extent at all times. I mean, it's got to be kind of draining, you know?
It's just draining for me to watch the trailer of a new Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly watched it and it felt so uninspired when it shouldn't. Like, it's a pretty cool game and there's a lot of budget and effort into this, but somehow it has zero effect on me. And it's like Batman. It's like if Arkham...
Whoa.
If Arkham Origins, let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
If Arkham Origins didn't come out, think about it. There would be a 4 year gap between Arkham City and Arkham Knight, and I'm really excited for Arkham Knight. But I can tell you,
it's the return of Rocksteady.
I would be a lot more excited about Arkham Knight if Origins never existed, and I didn't hear all the press about a Batman game 2 years ago, which didn't feel like 2 years ago. It felt like last year. But but like if there was a 4 year gap between Arkham City and Arkham Knight, like. There wouldn't be a blemish on their record of like that game,
yeah.
Like, and because it wasn't even them that made it. Like, if they didn't try to do a double or bi-annualization of it, or is it every 2 years with a Batman game?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that cycles like that are dumb.
I don't like them either. I really don't.
Like, video games are... Like, I don't believe in franchises for everything. I think there should be some one-offs. Whenever people see a new IP, they're like, well, I can't wait for the sequel, like, with The Order. Like, oh, well, this is going to start a great bunch of spinoffs and sequels, and if the first game sucks, then we'll just say, well, the sequels might be good. It's like, no, we don't need every IP and franchise to turn into 9 games. I want a bunch of IPs. I don't want a new IP that's the new platform for shooters.
I don't mind a sequel if it's
warranted.
Warranted, and if it's not done, if they have like if it's not done just because the first one was successful, yeah, then I don't mind it. I don't mind a sequel if you went into a game and you said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to develop this game with this idea, and I have all these story ideas and this. You know, in the first game, we can add these things. And then if all goes well and they green light us for a sequel, we can add like this stuff. And, you know, they have like this broad idea that can't fit all in like one single game. So they have things to expand on. And that's cool. But if it's just like a publisher that's like, hey, you guys, that game was successful, make more. You know, then they're like, oh, well, we were going to work on something else, but all right.
Yeah, now what's bigger, better, and more
they're just
badass.
Going through the motions.
Going through the motions, exactly. So, yeah. I don't know. The other thing about this trailer is, like, I saw some things in it, and there was, like, a 9-minute gameplay demo. I saw some things in it that I was like, you know, if that was, like, 3-4 years ago, I would have been like, that's cool. That looks kind of fun.
Yeah, I would have been hyped.
Yeah, it would have been, like, sweet, but if... But just with the way the franchise has been just shoveled down our throats in the press and at E3s, and it's like you can't go 3 months without hearing about, without having some sort of Assassin's Creed press.
Yeah, reveal.
Reveal or a trailer. Or a...
No, I mean, if you think about it too, all the spin-off stories and games that aren't even main numbered titles, or if you call them main numbered titles. Like, I mean, we had the China platformer that just came out. That's a different Assassin's Creed story. And then there's the one on the Vita with the Black Lady. And then there's the one...
I would have liked that China one, too, if it wasn't
for this.
It
was fucking China and real game. And it wasn't a piece of crap.
If it was... Yeah.
It wasn't even good.
speaking of sequels, so how do you feel about the new Rainbow Six, given the fact that it's been quite a long time?
I think it could be really cool.
Good. Okay. Good. I'm a big... Big Tom Clancy fan. I don't know why. I didn't even realize it until, like, I'd played a million Tom Clancy games, like every Tom Clancy game when it came out, and loved it.
Have you read any of his prose?
No.
I've read, like, halfway through one. It's good. I haven't finished it yet.
They're
big-ass books.
Huge. That's always intimidating. I'm like, eh. Reading about war versus playing a sweet game, I don't know. But, The Rainbow Six series is one of my favorites, and in terms of like a modern shooter, it is my favorite modern shooter. It is my favorite multiplayer shooter.
I love Rainbow Six Vegas so much.
Rainbow Six Vegas, and the multiplayer in Rainbow Six Vegas 2, the campaign sucked, but the multiplayer was awesome.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fun.
And, God, I love those games. So, yeah, Rainbow Six Siege, I am pumped for, because it's like, people are like, well, there's probably not a campaign in it. That makes me sad. I liked it. It was a different time, though. But I would play Siege multiplayer. Every time I see gameplay of it, I'm like, yeah. I mean, it looks like a new Rainbow Six game that they actually put effort into. I like Ubisoft's development efforts. I like their IPs, too.
I like their franchises.
All of them. I loved Watch Dogs. Everybody hates Watch Dogs. I don't think we ever talked about this
really
on the podcast.
I really liked Watch Dogs. So what I played, I didn't beat it. I'd like to. I'm still planning on going back and beating it, but I really like it too.
Some people are saying the graphics is still equivalent to PlayStation 3 graphics. What is
those
your guys'
people
take
can
on
take
that?
A big pee-pee.
Can and take a big pee-pee.
Why can't you just say they can go fuck themselves?
Because they need to take. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. That's not true.
No, I mean, don't be sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh, and another thing, I think it was Ubisoft, they announced, just keep it with Ubisoft, they announced that they're completely stopping development on the last generation of consoles, officially.
Yes.
They're done.
Which is good.
Which is good. I think that needs to happen at this point, because games are being held back by...
Because Black Flag would have looked a lot better if they hadn't made a version for PlayStation 3, right?
Well...
Black Flag would have looked a lot better if they delayed it and had it come out when Unity came out on the PS4 exclusively.
And had a new engine and stuff.
Yeah, with that engine.
you just mentioned it, so let's just move into that. But Tom Clancy, another Tom Clancy game. another Ubisoft game, The Division.
Yeah. So,
so they announced this week that it's being pushed out of 2015 into early 2016. So not a huge delay, probably.
Yeah.
Unless it gets delayed again, which I doubt. But they are pushing it back out of 2015.
I am really excited for The Division.
I am too. And I don't mind this delay.
I remember when The Division was revealed, there were a lot of people who were like, eh, I'm more excited for Destiny. And that's like, that was the average response. And I love Tom Clancy. And if half of what the game was advertised to be is what, I mean, it doesn't even need to be Tom Clancy's Destiny. It can, the MMO elements can just be a side thing. I don't care. Everything that they showed, from how the shooting, the third person shooting looks and feels,
yes,
and the mild RPG mechanics, which will probably be very mild, but I don't care. Again, the co-op looks like a blast. The natural AI in the city, just, it looked awesome. I want it.
It looked great. It looked, and let's be honest, I expect that there's going to be a graphical downgrade of some sort.
Yeah.
To a certain level. Unless you're playing it like on a high-end PC.
And you know what? Game's going to look fucking great.
Yeah, and you know that. It's going to be okay. It's, people are going to complain about it, I'm sure. But it's going to still, if it has what they had gameplay-wise, it'll be cool. It's going to be a sweet game.
People get so, and I know that this is a commonly brought up thing, but people get so bent out of shape over graphics these days. And everybody's been saying that since, like, the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people, that now, more than ever, that's just bullshit. Yeah. Like, when you're like, oh, Watch Dogs looks ugly. Like, my toaster could run that. The game looked fucking gorgeous. Man,
it looks really, really good.
Yeah, if I was in 2008, me, like, if I was, like, in high school and I looked at that game, I'd be like, I don't need anything but look better than this. Mm-hmm. If it does, awesome. But if it happens to look like it did, it looks great. Who cares?
And the thing about the graphical downgrade complaints that have been so frequent in the last few years, that's a touchy subject. I can, you know, when they come out and they show off a game and it looks like just incredible, and you look at it and you're like, wow, that's the next generation of games. That's what they look like. And then it comes out and they have downgraded the graphics. Unless it's like incredibly drastic, I'm not complaining that much. There are certain games, like for example, Dark Souls 2. Dark Souls 2 was drastic.
Huge. It was huge, it wasn't talked about, and it was in the beta that way. So
yeah.
Speaking of downgrades, on a side note, I've read that there's been a graphical downgrade on an upcoming Metal Gear game. Can you guys confirm that, and how do you feel about it?
I haven't heard that at all. I heard it looks great graphically.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about downgrade. I heard that The Witcher 3 is got a downgrade.
Yeah.
That was the drama I heard about.
People show like side-by-side pictures, and it looks amazing. You know, it looks great.
Well, okay, so...
Some of the effects, like particle effects and stuff, no, I understand.
There was some specific screenshots that people pointed out, and they said, they're showing some Let's Player who's probably running it on a piece of crap rig, but they're like, this is the game on Ultra. And they were comparing the bump mapping on a certain wall of the city. And the difference was these beautiful looking rocks in a gameplay demo from a trailer. And almost all of those rocks were like gone. It was that kind of difference. And things just looked uglier. And I'm just thinking, that can't be right. So those pictures are the ones that went viral, and they're pointing out all these things. They pointed out something from a CG trailer, and comparing that to a typical vista in the game. And I'm just like, okay, that one's bullshit. But then there's another one, or there's a bunch more, comparing graphical details. Well, if you look at the trailer that people are bitching about, it's a 2013 gameplay trailer. 2013. That was 2 years ago. The game looked completely different, and in many ways, so basically 2 years ago in this one trailer, this is before the good trailer came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a trailer that like nobody saw, and it was cheesier, and that was when they had the old logo for the game.
Right.
It didn't look as like it was going to be as good of a game. And the graphics looked a lot more detailed and but way darker and just less interesting visually. But it looked like too good to be true and more a little bit more like an upgraded version of The Witcher 2.
Yeah.
But it lacked serious color and it had way more particle effects and stuff. And those are all, you know, gone. And now, but the game's way more colorful. And honestly, it looks really nice. Like,
I think it looks amazing. It looks incredible.
It looks like a gorgeous game. Aesthetically, it seems to have improved. But technically, it's gone down so that it can sustain one of the biggest open worlds that doesn't need a load screen.
And not only that, but they are... I mean, I will say that... that there is likelihood that it got maybe downgraded a bit because they are a smaller team developing one game for three different platforms, different but similar platforms, and they have to the game has to be a look a certain way to match the common denominator, and it I'm sure obviously it's going to look it's going to look way better on PC and stuff, but it's not going to be like a drastic difference, so. It's still going to be an awesome game and look really good. Yeah. And, maybe
just a few days.
Yeah, just a few days away.
Yeah. For those of you who are getting The Witcher 3, remember, Monday night at 5 p.m., it releases, or around 5, it releases in Poland, which means it releases globally, digitally. So you can preload the game on any console or PC right now. And at 5 p.m. Monday night, you can play it.
Woo!
Sweet.
Yeah, that's good news.
Wow.
So, another piece of news that is more about corporate greed.
Fuck the fat cats.
So, the new CEO for Konami came out this week and... I say corporate greed, and I mean, let's be honest, they're all out there to make money. I don't mean to be, like, overly negative, but he came out and basically said that mobile gaming is their main platform, and that's the future of Konami from this point forward, which we kind of knew was going to happen from what's been going on with their studios switching around and with what happened with Kojima and everything like that. So I can't say I'm surprised, but... it still stings a bit to have this, big publisher that you've known since you were a kid and has been responsible for such, big games and everything to just come out and say, yeah, we're done with that. We're gonna focus on crappy, mobile.
Metal Gear Bejeweled is on the way, yeah. Guys.
Yeah. I can remember like 5 months ago, we were like, yeah, Konami's a lot better than Capcom. I mean, they can't do any wrong. At least that was my understanding of it, because I hardly ever heard anything bad about Konami, and just out of the blue, they started to reveal themselves.
Yeah. And from what I understand, they weren't so great behind the scenes. It just wasn't as public.
From
a developer standpoint.
Totally that. And I remember Jim Sterling, he ripped Konami apart in a video from 2012. I remember watching and I was like, wow, yeah, Konami's really bad. But it wasn't that well known. Like Capcom does the things, obviously, but Konami releases these big, awesome things sometimes. Rarely, but sometimes they come out with something.
Mm-hmm.
And they give the talented people the money and they say, go and do the thing. But, yeah, now they can't stay out of the news. We've talked about Konami every podcast, even the ones that you guys didn't get to hear.
Yeah.
They show up one way or another. And so now, yeah, Konami is going full mobile, which I am really disappointed by this news because I thought that it was going to mean that they're going down, like out of business by all these changes. If that were the case, and they'd sell off all their IPs to other companies, mm-hmm. and they'd distribute their shitty wealth, that company would collapse and the game industry would absorb it. And that isn't going to happen. They're going to try to stay afloat with worse business practices. But at least they won't cancel games.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with their properties with freaking mobile devices?
Hey, Contra on the iPad. New sequel.
Because everybody loves how that controls.
Contra Touch coming this winter.
Dance Dance Revolution iPad edition.
You just stomp on your iPad.
They're really durable.
I don't know. It's sad. I hope that's not the way that other publishers go. Another thing that was announced that's kind of cool. It's a smaller piece of news, mm-hmm. but we talked about it on like a podcast way back a while ago about Shinra Technologies. It's like a cloud-based gaming technology that's owned by Square Enix. They announced today that Human Head Studios, who were the developers behind the sadly canceled Prey 2.
No.
Yeah. No. That they're partnering with Shinra Technologies to make some sort of multiplayer game. So that could be cool. I wish it was just Prey 2 that they were developing.
That'd be sweet.
I was excited for that game. It looked like Blade Runner. That's what it reminded me of.
That game, I went to Penny Arcade Expo. I beat Prey 1. I absolutely love that game. That was one of my favorite FPSs ever made for a long time. And like if I had like a top 30, that was somewhere on there. Mostly because the atmosphere and the puzzles and everything was just brilliant. I still like the game. Anyways, Prey 2 was very different, but I was really excited to see more of that universe because it was so crazy and just cool.
Yeah, Prey 2 seemed like completely not.
It was totally, totally different. But at the same time, it felt like it had the same heart. Either that, or it just appealed to me just as much. Like I trusted anything that the devs did with that IP after the first game, and that gameplay bit looked awesome. So I went to Penny Arcade Expo, and they had this massive, massive booth for Prey 2. And they had a live gameplay presentation with this guy playing the game, and they threw out Prey 2 shirts. So I have a Prey 2 shirt. I used to wear it all the time.
Sweet.
And I was so excited for that game. That was actually one of my most hyped games, and all my friends who'd never played Prey watched that live gameplay, and they're like, oh my god, that game looks awesome. So that one really hits close to home. It's a weird realization that that's not a game that I can look forward to.
You just cry into your Prey 2 shirt every night?
I do. I really do. Because for so long, that was just one of those top three games that was just far out there. Like, oh yeah, we can look forward to that game sometime. Some news on that. And it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's worse than Silent Hills for me. Well, even though I was really looking forward to Silent Hills. Maybe it's because I was younger. But, like, because it was a long time ago. That was before Skyrim. That was 2010. I'm sad by that. And I'm glad that the studio is doing something else. They're really talented. But whatever they do, I hope it's related to Prey 2. Otherwise, it's a sad realization that it's actually gone.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Prey 2.
Sweet, open-world, first-person bounty hunting. That's just...
God, even just that. Just you saying that sounds just super appealing.
The alien designs for the people that you talk to and stuff.
They were awesome. Were
badass. The city looked incredible. It just looked like my kind of game, and it's gone.
We'll never forget you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a moment of silence. No, I'm just kidding. Now, this was... they released a trailer for it, I think. They released a new trailer for Arkham Knight. One of you mentioned it earlier, Arkham Knight. We should have just talked about it then. But I also watched a video today, and they kind of explained how the character swapping mechanic works. And they didn't really...
That was what I watched.
Okay, yeah. So
it was a trailer?
I don't know. That's just what... I thought somebody said that. Oh, I just heard lies.
I was referring to that video today.
So they didn't, however, touch on, which I wanted to know a little bit more... If you can play as those characters outside of just combat situations, or if they just show up randomly during missions, like you call them in or something, I don't know.
It's probably going to be like a call-in.
That's what I imagine. I just think it would be cool to run around as Nightwing.
Why not?
Seriously. Why fucking not?
Yeah, that
they got
sounds
the
like
assets.
No, that sounds like the obvious thing. Why would you restrict it, limit it like that?
Yeah, we don't know. It's just
Fuck you, Rocksteady.
I mean, we seriously aren't going to be angry at Rocksteady for that. I'm sure the rest of the game will be great. But
it looks cool, the character swapping.
I've got to say, watching Batman kick ass and Nightwing came in there and he kicked ass and then switching back between... But, like, he was playing, but Nightwing was over there whipping people in the butt and, like...
And, like, they had, like, funny banter back and forth. Like, Nightwing would beat a guy and be like, here you go, and, like, throw him to Batman.
It looked awesome. That little gameplay detail actually gets me a lot more excited. Because initially my idea of what Arkham Knight's going to be is just Arkham City, but better and significantly better looking and probably better playing. But there are more and more details coming out that's like, oh no, this is a bigger leap than Arkham.
Arkham Asylum to Arkham City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On account of the fact that those Zol News, you get to drive the freaking Batmobile.
And use its cannon to combo enemies while you're punching them. And
yes. You get to Shoryuken them into the air and then...
Did you ever notice that in the trailer?
Mm-mm.
Because there's a part of it, when you started talking about it, it was really funny. Batman's beating the snot out of this poor guy. And
This poor shop owner that didn't do a thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
There's just this thug, and Batman uppercuts him, and the guy just flies in the air, and then, like, somehow the Batmobile is just like, meow, 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 and the camera cuts to him while the guy's still in the midair. The turret pops out, rotates, and blasts, like, a giant rubber cannonball, and it hits the guy in midair and sends him flying in a different direction as like a part of the combo.
Jeez.
And like, it was kind of hard to notice. It looked like it was just, you know, the Batmobile was just shooting somebody in the trailer, but if you notice, like, no, Batman freaking comboed the guy into that and then hit him again with a cannonball.
I love the environmental combat stuff in this one, and I'm surprised that wasn't in the old games more, because it's something that he utilizes a lot and pretty much any media he's in. But in the latest video, he like picks up a fucking oil drum or something and just hurls it at a bunch of guys. Just little things like that. I like it. I'm excited for that game. It's super soon too.
Yeah. I'm excited because I mean I'm looking forward to the game, but then I was reading your Batman comics.
Ooh. You know what? Let's get into that. We
didn't finish the second one though.
Are you liking it so far, though?
I love it. It's great.
It's such an interesting, like, story.
Yeah, I didn't think it was possible for me to not like it.
For those of you that don't know, he's currently reading, he borrowed the Court of the Owls and City of Owls.
So part one and two of Batman New 52.
Yeah.
And part one was what I finished. And, yeah, I read it all in one sitting. And it was badass. I liked all the character dynamics. I liked each page was relatively dense, but the villain was awesome, and it was really cool because it was a very refreshing Batman story, because it's just like, you know, who's really running the city, and and you know, here Batman's the legend who thinks he's in charge, and then after all this time.
There's something happening under his nose that he never knew about.
And I still don't know how they're going to end it. Like, it's actually suspenseful. I finished the first book, and I can't think of how they're going to wrap up
the way it ends is badass.
I'm excited, because, yeah, I mean, they just discovered, was it the Waynes, or Nightwing, what's his name?
Oh, you'll find out.
Yeah, I found out something at the end involving the DNA.
Of Dick Grayson, yeah, one of his ancestors.
Was that who was fighting, Batman was fighting? Was
Dick Grayson's ancestor? Yeah.
Wasn't it also some Waynes at the end of the first?
I'm not sure, I don't think so.
So I guess it was just that, but it was awesome, it was fucking awesome. And there was one particular part that really stood out, and is when you have to flip the book around when he's going crazy.
Yeah.
And then you have to flip it around again because it's upside down. At first I thought it was just like a sideways panel. There have been like some manga that do that, where they do like some perspective. They never go like
expect you to flip the book upside down. And just a little, it's like Kojima was writing it. Little things like that.
Yeah.
That just to try to get the reader to, because I've read comics where the character goes crazy and he starts seeing crazy things, and it's just a bunch of trippy art for a few pages, and it happens in a lot of very manly comics, like Berserk is like 90% that. And when that does happen, I just kind of flip past it quickly because there's no dialogue. I'm like, ooh, trippy art. And I flip. Mm-hmm. But it's like the character's going crazy, and you don't really feel that. And for some reason, just the simple act of flipping the book around, like, you totally got that Batman was, like, in a shit place right mm-hmm. then and there. Yeah. Like, he was going berserk, and so are you. You're like, oh, shit, this is upside down. And you're like, and you turn the page, like, how you normally would, and you're like, you went back, like, oh, wait, no.
Yeah. Yeah, and then someone's watching, and they're like, is he reading that upside down? Is he fucking going crazy?
Yeah.
And someone who's familiar is like, ah, oh, no, it's a Snyder comic.
Yeah.
FYI, the writer, Scott Snyder, is also the writer of another great series called American Vampire. I'm not a vampire fan. It's a great fucking book. Incredible.
I can be a vampire fan. It depends on how they're done.
It's gotta be good.
We're all Castlevania fans.
Yes,
yeah, so yeah. I like classic vampires.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who recommend like anime based on vampires, and they're always shit. And but then there's this one that I watched, and I've always just said I don't like vampires. Castlevania is the only exception, and even then, like, I was really hesitant to get into Castlevania because I was like, eh, they're lame. But yeah, I watched this one show, and it kind of goes back to the Castlevania style of like the old school Dracula storytelling,
mm-hmm.
but a little more modern rendition of it. And it was the coolest thing, the dynamic between vampires and humans and stuff. It's awesome. So
what's this called?
It's called Shiki.
Shiki.
That sounds interesting to me.
It was it's one of my favorite anime out there. It's absolutely disgusting and hardcore.
That so, being said though, before you continue, Striker, the same team is on that book for a very long time. As a matter of fact, there's still the team on it. But the art just gets... Greg Capullo, the artist of that book, he gets better and better and better. And there gets to a point where the writer goes for a long time without having big, long dialogue boxes. If that's what you mean by dense. So it kind of...
Well, there wasn't a lot of dialogue in Batman. There was just a lot going on in the panels.
Yeah.
To look at.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of... there are a lot of manga that I've read that have zero words, but each page is like a picture. And you get that picture quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But in this Batman comic, and I feel like most American comics that I've read are that way, where you look at a page longer.
Yeah, you have to actually, kind of analyze it to see what's going on and who's doing what. And yeah, I know what you mean by that.
He does learn to communicate better as his run goes on, though. Especially, I believe, at Zero Year. Zero Year, a storyline that I completely stand up for. I love it. It's kind of... Some people didn't get it.
Wait, does he do all of New 52 Batman, or...?
Most of it. Snyder and Capullo are... They're writing just the main Batman series, when Scott Snyder has been writing Batman Eternal, another book, which I haven't really gotten that much into. I've just read Batman. But then there are other writers writing Batgirl and Nightwing and yada. Yada, yada. But, yeah, really, really great book.
So, how many are there? Because they just finished their run of New 52 Batman, right?
I think they're getting rid of the New 52 thing, but I don't know if they're rebooting the universe or not. Basically, what happened with the whole Convergence thing, it was the equivalent to what Marvel's doing with Secret Wars, only Marvel's was much more thought out, much more built up upon. And DC was really just looking for something to do while they started to pack up and move to LA so they can have books come out that month. That being said, the continuity in Batman's pretty much the same. I think they're just not going to be calling it New 52. But it's the same writers, and they're still writing Batman. Strangely enough, and this is completely from left field, and I don't know how I still feel about this. I don't know how other people are going to feel about this. Now that, for the time being, Batman and Joker are out of the picture, Jim Gordon's Batman.
I don't like that.
I'm not like it. I'm not shitting you. It sounds terrible, but I'm going to try it.
Wait.
Jim Gordon's in basically a Batman, sort of Iron Man-ish armor, because the Powers Corporation, you know, from Batman Beyond,
mm-hmm.
right? They're like, oh, Gotham needs Batman, and so they create this, you know, exoskeleton suit, throw Jim Gordon in it.
Who is Jim Gordon? I know he's in this comic, but I didn't
Commissioner
even
Gordon. You know, have you seen? Yeah. Gary Oldman.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't thinking of Commissioner Gordon.
But it's
I
just,
was thinking of another character, the detective who's smoking a cigar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They referred to him like he was he's some classic Batman character.
Yeah, he's a Batman animated series.
Oh, Bullock?
Yeah.
Was
Harvey
it?
Bullock?
Harvey.
Yeah.
Because I was like...
No, that would be fucked up if Harvey Bullock was the new Batman.
That was the first thing that came to mind. I was like, Harvey?
See, the thing is with that is the one of the great pieces of storytelling in Batman is always the dynamic between him and Commissioner Gordon, because Commissioner Gordon can't cross the line that Batman does as far as being a vigilante, and he relies on Batman without fully, like, what am I trying to say? He doesn't encourage it, so to speak, but mm-hmm. he knows that he'll do it no matter what, and he helps him.
I love the dynamic between Commissioner Gordon and Batman. That was one of my... Commissioner Gordon's, like, my favorite character in Batman.
Nope,
I don't know why.
No problem. Nothing against that, dude. Absolutely.
Dude's like a badass version of Flanders from The Simpsons.
Yeah, he's... he's a great character.
He's really smart, and he's all... Like you said, he's always, like, in the... He's always kind of on the front line of everything, but he's pushing Batman there.
Yeah. Exactly. I like that dynamic. So before we get into it, I want to save this for last. And Johnny and I saw Mad Max, and we plan on talking about it. But before we do that, have you guys been playing anything new this week?
I have, in celebration of The Witcher 3, I have returned to one of the magnum opuses of the last-gen consoles. You want to guess?
Witcher 2?
No, Five Finger Fillet. Guess what game that's from?
Red Dead
motherfucking Redemption. The reason why I'm doing it is because I'm trying to unlock new costumes, and I'm doing it in vain.
Holy
complete and utter
shit.
Vain. And, you know, I'm just wondering, man, I wish there was a DLC for this. I mean, DLCs can't be that backhanded.
I unlocked the Legend of the West costume in that game, which is you have to get, like, almost everything, or maybe you do have to get everything.
You basically
100%. I got that costume, and I was so proud of it, and then I was like, cool, there's nothing to fucking do with this costume. Because you can't, like, carry them over to, like a New Game Plus
or
anything.
Can't go online with it.
You can't do anything with it. You just get this costume, and you're done with the game. And I was like, that was a waste. I'm proud of myself, and this costume looks badass. I wish I could do stuff with it, but... Yeah, that's my sad story, the Legend of the West costume.
I was looking at more gameplay of The Witcher 3, and I was keeping an eye on the minimap, and I noticed that when you, like, kill creatures or characters, it marks the map with, like, a little gray X, like it does in Red Dead. And just the way the map moves and, like, your minimap updates while you're riding your horse and stuff, I was sitting there, I'm thinking, man, they're not kidding, this looks and feels like Red Dead.
Yeah, it really
like, just
does.
Like, traversing on the horse, specifically. I mean...
Good for me.
Everything else... is very Witcher and other things, but that part where you're riding around the horse,
like the random events with strangers mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
There are so many games that get horseback riding horribly wrong, and every time,
Skyrim.
Every time. I remember Oblivion tried it. Every time an RPG's done that, imagine Oblivion 3 or 4 years after or before Skyrim, and Skyrim still fucked up the horses. They didn't learn a thing. Anyways. The most RPGs can't get horses right, and even non-RPGs can't get horses right unless the game focuses on that, like, heavily. The Witcher looks like it's gonna play really.
The
nice
Witcher
on
has sexy horses.
It has beautiful, sexy, just.
Getting excited there.
Okay, move on.
So next week we're going to have played The Witcher by then. By the time we record next week, on several our next episode. You
better believe it.
We will have played a lot of Witcher. You can believe that.
I bet you all want to just like go forward in time, just so you can hear us talk about playing the Witcher.
Yeah.
I know I do.
I just want to go forward in time so I can have played it.
Yes.
So, the other big thing that happened this week, a huge, over-the-top, epic event, was Johnny and I went to a showing of Mad Max Fury Road.
Are you guys going to spoil it?
No.
You
can't.
Really?
You can, but we won't talk about details, badass details of the movie.
We'll just talk about our opinion on it, how we felt, and you know some of the things we liked about it. But we won't spoil it because we
question,
know that a lot of people have not, well, will not have seen it by the time this.
How is Tom Hardy in the movie as Mad Max in comparison to Mel Gibson?
Tom Hardy is a different type of Mad Max,
okay.
But he was really good and compelling.
Mad Max good. Wasn't. Max wasn't well defined as a character, from what I
he never he never talked. He had like 12 lines of dialogue.
He's pretty well defined in the very first movie,
yes.
But in the second and
third,
there's not much else going on.
And you didn't really need like he's well defined in his actions. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's lost his wife and kids, and so he does these things, and just through his actions, he develops his character. Which is the perfect type of character development for an action movie. Go,
mm-hmm.
go figure. And so the most impressive part about Mad Max Fury Road is that Max develops as a character, and he takes a sort of a side seat in the movie. Not really. Not like
I hear that.
Not like the new the Thunderdome one.
Right, but us to a certain extent.
There, yeah, the girl Charlize Theron,
yeah.
Furiosa. She is almost. She's about. People say she's more of a main character than Max, and I would say plot wise, yes, but their screen time is shared.
Plot wise, though, that's the thing about Mad Max movies is he isn't the character in the wasteland. He's a character in the wasteland. He's never the central. It's like a Western. Like we were talking about this earlier.
He's kind of a narrator.
Yeah, he comes along and is a part of a larger situation that he just kind of falls into. He's and this situation would happen whether he was there or not.
Yeah.
He's just a guy trying to survive, and so yeah. Plot wise, the plot's mainly concerned with what she's doing and her agenda. So
yeah, and the amount of effort and passion and. Practical effects that went into making this movie
and creativity
just oh my god it's unbelievable. I walked out of that movie beaming like and all my friends did as well. Like we couldn't get over what we just saw, and it was just an action movie. I mean, it wasn't like the plot was anything life-changing. You know, I don't typically get excited over action. That's how good it was. They managed to, you know, like, the movie's kind of one big chase scene, like the trailer implies. And so I was thinking, like, how are they going to pull that off? And they do.
Really well.
Really well.
Incredibly
they constantly
well.
Break it up into different segments. And
yeah, it's to my understanding that George Miller spent the longest time just trying to get this movie made. At one point, the screenplay he had, it was going to be a cartoon voiced by Mel Gibson at one point.
It was going to be an anime.
Yeah.
They actually had an animation studio making us... that was slightly different. There was originally a cartoon, and then he was going to make the Furiosa movie with a script, an anime made by an actual Japanese animation
Mad
studio.
Mad Max anime would be pretty badass.
Yeah,
it would be just awesome.
That
was just the Furiosa movie, just about Charlize Theron.
And this was originally going to be with Mel Gibson, original screenplay. This has been in development hell for...
90s. Since the 90s.
Since the
yeah.
fucking 90s.
Yeah, since he made Babe. So for those who aren't familiar, the director of Mad Max, George Miller, he writes and directs all his movies. He did all three Mad Max, and then he did Babe in the 90s because he had kids. This is how I listened to an interview last night. He had kids, and all of a sudden he wanted to make kids movies. So he made Babe, he made Babe 2, they made Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2. Those were the last four movies that George Miller has done, and he says, now my kids are growing up.
So I can just do whatever I want.
Like,
I
want to
blow
my,
some people
like,
the
my,
fuck up.
He's like, now my kids are at the age where they want to see me make a Mad Max movie too. So I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. But he decided he was going to make Mad Max in the late 90s, and then he got Mel Gibson, and he wrote the script for Fury Road. which I'm sure is a lot different now. But then 9/11 happened, and the economy collapsed for Australia, so it just didn't work out. Then they get, you know, new cast. They have the current crew, the current script in like 2007 or something. They go down to Australia to make it happen this time. Mel Gibson's no longer involved because I just think he, at that point in time, he stopped involving himself with movies. Maybe just a pretty, I don't know what he does now. And so they went down to Australia. They went to the same filming site as the Road Warrior, as all of them, actually. They all share the same site. And it rained. For the first time in 15 years, it rained heavily, and they started growing flowers and desert blossoms and crap, and there was like a swamp that formed with critters, and he's like, well, this is beautiful, but this isn't Mad Max. So, so they went to the driest place on the planet where it never has rained, Namibia, which is the oldest desert on the earth. It's like millions of years. It's untouched. Hardly anybody lives in Namibia. It's kind of dangerous. There's indigenous tribes of naked people with spears. Like, that country is apparently just crazy. It's like visiting Mars. People, I've listened to people on travel forums talk about it. So I was already kind of intrigued by that country, and I heard that they're filming it there. And I mean, that's like a Lord of the Rings kind of setup. Like, they got like a base camp. They filmed for 3 months. And all the effects are practical, all the stunts. They didn't have a lot of... I don't think they had any stunt doubles for a lot of the actors.
Because there was some green screen or CG weren't called for it, though, right?
No. Well, there's CG, but there was zero green screen or blue screen in the entire movie.
Love it.
The whole thing's in the desert. When they blow shit up, they blow shit up. There is aided CG effects, but for the most part, when the cars roll, they roll.
And the CG... the setting for this movie was such an amazing part, and like some of the scenes and the scale of some of the stuff that happens, and the cinematography and stuff is like striking.
Some yeah, like, a lot of people were talking about how do they film that shot? Yeah. That you're just constantly saying that in the movie. It's like the cameramen in this movie were also hardcore stuntmen.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it is. It is, in my opinion, probably the best action movie of all time, as an action movie. I mean, I've got favorite movies, but I can't think of anything I want more out of an action movie.
Now, I have one thing to ask. Is there a traveling rock band?
You'll find out.
Fuck! That is the one thing I was wanting to be spoiled. Okay, you know what?
Well, you've seen the trailer.
Don't.
Jesus, man.
It's all right.
Don't fucking say it. Don't rock with Tina Turner's in it. She's gonna make a cameo.
Did they play Painkiller by Judas Priest? I don't know. That'd be fitting. Well, anyway, it's just I just love that image of
I like that you had a specific song picked out that you've always wanted to have.
Yeah. Makes sense, man. Anyway. Yeah, did you not notice the guitar guy in the trailer?
I did.
That's a thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that metal enough?
That's metal as fuck.
You're gonna love it. All right. You're gonna fucking love this movie. And the critical reception is so overwhelmingly positive that my hype going in was through the roof, and I knew that it probably wouldn't live up to it. And it did.
I honestly don't know if I've been this excited for a movie. I can't remember the last time.
I don't know if I've been this excited after a movie.
Yeah, same here. That's like a really good point.
I've been excited going in and come out. I'm like, that was really good. But I came in and I just like, I keep thinking about it. And I'm seeing it again. I'm seeing it in a fucking hour 15.
Okay, you just flipped us off. Do you know that you did that?
Yeah, but it's, the Maloic, there's just too much metal in the Maloic. So I had to distribute the metalist to the middle finger. Because this is metal as well.
That's fantastic.
That is very metal. The movie is fucking metal. Go see it. Johnny's Movie Reviews, 11 out of 10, fucking metal. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah,
mine matches up with that. I put my stamp on that as
sweet.
Well.
Sweet. It makes me want to go read some heavy metal magazine. But oh, wait, it's $7 for a thin magazine. It just gets thinner and thinner. I'm not going to spend $7 on that, but I will watch Mad Max Fury Road.
That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
$7
for a magazine?
Yeah.
I remember paying $12.50 for a Tips and Tricks magazine when I was
It
on
seems
road
there's less and less pages in it too. So, anyway.
Well, I guess that's a show, guys.
Yeah.
So now next week, as long as you guys are on board, mm-hmm. Johnny and I talked about this. What we want to do next week is we want to have a E3, episode.
Okay.
Where we talk. Now, obviously, when E3 happens, we're going to talk about that a lot. But just kind of our speculation on what they're going to show, okay. What we'd like to see, what we think we will see, and things like that. So, yeah. we're gonna do that next week. Obviously, we're gonna on top of that talk a lot about The Witcher. Possibly, we probably won't want to talk about
no.
It
much. Yeah,
Witcher cast.
There will be plenty of Witcher, and then on top of that, our E3 predictions, hopes, and ideas. So, thank you for listening. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/pixelchickenpodcast. Follow us on Twitter. That's @pixel_chicken. And Phil, you got something to say.
Roar, cunt!
All right, that's it. Thank you.
That's landed on that.